In the Gospels, for the most part, we don't get to hear a whole awful lot about what happens after the resurrection of Jesus. In the Gospels, we just don't. There are some short appearances by the risen Jesus in each of the Gospels, but in the Gospel of John, though, in the Gospel of John, Jesus appears to a number of his disciples, and really kind of have a special lingering look at what life was like for them after the resurrection, and about what Jesus might have to say to all of us who are still in this kind of post-resurrection life ourselves. And so today we're reading another resurrection appearance story from the Gospel of John, from chapter 20. But Thomas, who is called the twin, one of the 12, was not with them when Jesus came. So the other disciples told him, "We have seen the Lord." But he said to them, "Unless I see the mark of the nails in his hands, and put my finger in the mark of the nails and my hand in his side, I will not believe." Although the doors were shut, Jesus came and stood among them and said, "Peace be with you." Then he said to Thomas, "Put your finger here and see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it in my side. Do not doubt, but believe." And Thomas answered him, "My Lord and my God." Jesus said to him, "Have you believed because you have seen me? Blessed are those who have not seen and yet have come to believe." And each of the stories in the Gospels of John, where Jesus appears after his resurrection, it is clear that the disciples are having a hard time grasping this new reality. They've missed the message we see, and it seems repeatedly, even after this miraculous event, they're still having trouble. Even after Jesus shows up and appears to them in person, they're not quite getting it. Jesus has already come. He's already come to the disciples. He's already showed them his hands and his side, breathed his spirit upon them, and he sent them out to begin the resurrection work and to share the good news. But here now, here a week later, here they are again. Here they are again, just sitting in the house with the doors shut behind them. We're not really told in the story where Thomas was, what he was doing when Jesus came to the disciples the first time. We don't really know, but you got to give it to him that at least he's not locked behind these doors with the rest of the disciples. At least he's not there like that with them. Though Thomas does have troubles of his own, of course, doubting Thomas, as he's been named. In the story, we see that he hears the good news about Jesus from the disciples, but he won't believe it until he can see for himself, till he can touch and for himself touch the marks where the nails had been in Jesus, till he can do it himself. In each of these stories where Jesus meets the disciples, Jesus is coming to them and he's blessing them and then he's trying to send them out. And resurrection stories are always commissioning stories. They're always these commissioning stories, sending us out into the world to tell the story. But in each of these encounters that Jesus has with the disciples, each time there is this struggle. There's fear or there's doubt. There's a struggle to believe and go out and really live it and share the story. There was a Christian who told of an encounter that he had with a Buddhist Zen teacher. And as part of a retreat, he had a private session with the teacher who sat before him smiling from ear to ear and rocking happily back and forth. And finally, the teacher said to him, he said, "I would like Christianity, but I would not like Christianity without the resurrection," he said. And then he said, "I want to see your resurrection." And the Christian later said what the teacher was politely trying to tell him was that you are a Christian. Show me what this means to you in your life, and I will believe it. It's like he was saying, I'm not seeing it. It doesn't look much like you believe it. The disciples are sent out. They are sent out to tell of the resurrection, to live it, but I'm not sure that they really quite believe it yet. They're not ready to live it yet. It's safer where they are, but a safely removed kind of faith is not really what Jesus has in mind for his people. To believe, really believe, means more than knowing a truth. It's living it. The Christian theologian Peter Rollins has a powerful monologue that speaks to what it might look like to really believe or to fail to believe in the resurrection. And Rollins begins and he says, I fully and completely admit that I deny the resurrection, he says. And then after a pause, he continues and he says, I deny the resurrection of Christ every time I do not serve the struggling oppressed. Deny the resurrection. Every day that I turn my back on the poor, I deny the resurrection when I close my eyes to the cries of those in need. And he says, though, there are moments when I affirm the resurrection, few and far between as they are. I affirm the resurrection when I stand up for those who are forced to live on their knees, when I speak for those who haven't been given a voice, when I cry for those who have no more tears left to shed. Jesus invites us to believe, to fully believe, not only with our heads and with our hearts, but with our lives too, to fully believe. To have these struggles in belief, to have these doubts, we see in each of these stories, it seems like it may be a part of the journey. To come to believe fully. First, we may be swimming in doubt, and faith might seem really thin. But we see that this is exactly where Jesus shows up, in those places of doubt and confusion where faith is running really, really low. Thomas, he wanted to see and to know for himself, to touch his hands, touch his side and to see the scars of Jesus. He would not believe it unless he could. He's struggling with faith, doubting Thomas. And yet the response from Jesus to Thomas is really amazing. Thomas doubts. Thomas demands that he be able to touch the marks of Jesus, to see for himself. And in response, Jesus does not correct him. The risen Jesus doesn't scold Thomas or shame him for his doubts. Jesus simply comes and he offers himself with love to Thomas, with patience for Thomas. He says to Thomas, he says, put your finger here and see my hands. Reach out your hand and put it in my side. Jesus doesn't chastise Thomas for his doubt. Never did he lecture the disciples for staying behind those closed doors. Jesus just offers himself to the ones struggling in disbelief, to the ones who doubt. He comes and offers himself, his whole self, in love for people as they are, struggling disciples, doubting disciples. This is good news for us, that Jesus comes and blesses and loves disciples as they are, even when they're really short on faith. This is the way that Jesus handles doubt. This is how Jesus handles doubt. He doesn't set up these obstacles to faith, expecting his followers to jump hurdles of belief. Jesus just meets people where they are. Jesus meets us where we are, wherever we might be. Thomas, as full of doubt as he was, it was a gift that Jesus gave him. He could see, Thomas could see and touch and know the love of Jesus for him in those wounds. When doubt seems to drag us down, and it can, if faith seems far away, we can know still, we can be confident, we should be confident that Jesus is the one who comes and meets us as we are, meets us wherever we are and offers up himself, meets us with his love. There was an American televangelist who was interviewed on the BBC about what he thought of Jesus. And he said that the televangelist said that Jesus was the most successful religious figure of all time. And the interviewer came back and asked, but what about the cross? And the televangelist replied, oh no, he overcame the cross. And he put all that behind him. And in some sense, that is true, that he overcame death. The cross isn't the whole story. But the gospel here is trying to tell us something more, too, that the one who is risen, that overcame death, that one who overcame death really is the one who is crucified. He bears scars. He bears the scars of love for our sake. We find what we're looking for, risen Savior, not in perfect condition, but in a wounded body. Really crucified. It's real wounds, real scars. And so it is real love then. It's real love too that Jesus meets us with. There's a story told of a small boy who was being raised in a frontier city by his grandmother. And one night the house caught fire and the grandmother, trying to rescue the boy who was asleep in the bedroom upstairs, is overcome. She is overcome by the smoke, and she dies in the fire. And the frontier city doesn't have much of a fire department, and a crowd gathers around the house, and they hear a small boy crying out for help. And the lower floor is a wall of flames, and no one seems to know what to do. But suddenly, this man pushes through the crowd, and he begins climbing this big iron drain pipe that runs up to the roof. And the pipe is hot from the fire, but he makes it to the second floor window, and then the man crawls through the window and finds the boy. And with the crowd cheering, the man climbs back down the hot iron pipe with a boy on his back and his arms around his neck. And a few weeks later, a public meeting was held to determine in whose custody the boy would be placed. And each person wanting the child would be allowed to make a brief statement. And the first man said, I have a farm. I have a farm, and I would give the boy a good home. And he would grow up on the farm and learn a trade. And the second person to speak was a local school teacher. And she said, I'm a school teacher, and I would see to it that he received a good education. And finally, the banker said that Mrs. Morton and I would be able to give the boy a fine home and a fine education. We would love for him to come and live with us. And the presiding officer looked around and asked, is there anyone else who would like to say anything? And then from the back, a man rose and said, these other people may be able to offer some things that I can't. And he said, all I can offer is my love, he said. And then he slowly removed his hands from his coat pockets. And a gasp went through the crowd because his hands were scarred terribly from climbing up and down that hot drain pipe. And the boy ran to the man, recognizing him as the one who saved his life. The farmer and the teacher, the banker, they sat down. Everyone knew what the decision would be. The scarred hands proved that this man had given more than all the others. When Jesus first appeared to his frightened disciples after he had risen from the dead, he showed them the marks on his hands, marks on his side. Jesus' scarred hands prove for us just how much he loves us as we are. He loves us, meets us wherever we are on our journey of faith, offers up himself for us that we might know the love of God for ourselves, that we might see and fully believe with our heads and with our hearts and with our lives. People are still waiting. People are still waiting to see the marks for themselves. People are still looking and hoping to see and to believe. But these thousands of years later, removed from Jesus physically on here on earth with us, people still want to see, but in Jesus' hands, not in Jesus' hands, not in his side anymore. They're waiting. They are waiting to see the marks of Jesus, and they can. They can see the marks. They can see the marks in us as we offer up ourselves, as we offer up our lives, our hands and feet, working in love. They can see the evidence that Jesus is alive and working in the world through those believers living like people who know the good news. We are called to leave the marks of love in the world, to leave marks of the love of Christ in the world. We can leave those marks. Let us be the church beyond these doors to share the good news that we've found with those who need to see it for themselves. Amen.